Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to the Human Animal Connection Show, where we believe we can communicate with all animals. Join us as we explore the 33 principles and healing methods of the human animal connection. As animal lovers, we know that you share our commitment to making the world a kinder place for all creatures. Together, let's embrace the transformative healing power of the human-animal connection.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're joining us for the Human-Animal Connection podcast. And I have a really fun show for you today. We're going to be talking about, you know, we talk about singing to your dog. So we're going to talk to the creator of Canine Lullabies, Terry Woodford. And he was formerly a producer, music producer of hit songs for all kinds of famous groups, the Supremes, and well, tell me, Terry, list a few of them so I could remember them all.
Kind of depends on how old you are as to whether you'll recognize them, but the Temptations, the Commodores, Supremes, Hank Williams Jr., Brenda Lee, Steppenwolf, who else? Lots of folks.
That's great. And now you're singing to the dogs.
Well, actually, we're singing a couple of three songs on there. I never really mentioned that, but it is true. I used to sing background and sing on national commercials for Budweiser and American Dairy Association and things like that, which was a lot of fun because it was so easy to do and you made so much money doing it, you know?
Yeah, that's great. Well, from rock and roll to rockabye.
Actually, what happened, this music wasn't really intended for dogs. It was just I was challenged by a daycare provider to come up with music for kids at nap time.
Uh-huh.
And at that time in my life, it was October, and there's not much recording going on during them because all the artists are out, you know, doing concerts at Christmas area time. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to do that, there's no point reinventing the loom, you know, so I'll just use traditional nursery songs that have been around for 200-300 years. And but I figured I better do something a little bit unique, or all my peers are going to think I'm on the way out, you know.
right.
Making lullabies. So I decided to record the human heart from the chest and use it as the rhythm of these Rockabye Baby and Mary Had a Little Lamb and your typical Brahms lullaby songs. And didn't realize it was going to be such a technical challenge because the heart doesn't beat in tempo, and I forgot about that. Oh. And it's at such low frequencies, you know, is it going to reproduce on these little cheap at the time cassette players? And so it became more of a technical challenge to get it in tempo, and had to record it one beat at a time, and then you know, get it to where it could reproduce on these cheap players. And so after I had five songs, I had it tested in a newborn nursery at Helen Keller Hospital. And they found that 94% of crying babies would stop crying in less than 2 minutes when you played it. And I thought, well, that's an A.
that's pretty something.
It doesn't really matter. You know, all babies cry in newborn nurseries. So
yeah,
I didn't think much about it until I got a call from the cardiac recovery unit at the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And they'd gotten a copy and we're playing it on babies after open heart surgery. And so they invited me to come down, which was about 120 miles away. I'm now in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And I went down there thinking I was going to meet them in an office, and they took me in the cardiac recovery unit, and I almost passed out. I was like, I saw these little babies, you know, cut from the neck to their belly button, the tube, monitors and beepers and buzzers. I had to put my head down between my legs.
Aww. Yeah.
But the nurses were, excited for me to see what was going on. And they had this one little baby, and the heart rate was about 200 and wasn't breathing regularly. And they started playing the very first song, which was London Bridge. And the little baby's heart rate slowed down within 15 seconds, and the breathing regulated.
Wow.
And quite frankly, it scared me because I didn't know anything about this. I'd never been in the hospital as a patient. So
yeah.
Anyway, they were pretty excited about it and asked me if I could make some more songs because the nurses were getting tired of hearing those same five songs over and over. Could I fix it the way it could be played at a lower volume and it'd still be effective? So I got pretty excited about what was going on and built a special little speaker that you could put a bigger speaker in and you could play it at a lower volume. So anyway, I just decided to get out of the music industry and spread the use of the music to neonatal intensive care units and pediatrics and MRI and so forth. And so I started doing television news stories around the country and going into hospitals and let the nurses talk about it. And so it got to where it was used in over 8,000 hospitals and special care centers. The military used it to, in the new parent support programs to help mamas get their baby to sleep and to prevent infant abuse, because crying is the primary trigger for infant abuse.
Yes.
So that was where my heart was, a little more in the neonatal intensive care units and speaking to social workers and doctors and so forth. And so telling them why I thought it would work and why music can be as powerful as drugs. And I started getting emails and calls from people who said that their little baby, the CD that they, or cassette, whichever they happen to have, that they were using for their baby also calmed their dog. And I'm thinking, no, come on. Yeah, so I guess one reason I didn't believe it is I couldn't explain it. I mean, I can explain why it worked on babies so well. But yeah. I think the same music could work on dogs. I thought, well, these are probably people that are, you know, putting human characteristics on their dog. In fact, once I had dogs, I did the same thing. You know, I got to where I'd talk to my dog because it always listened to me and never objected to what I said.
Of course, yes.
But anyway, so I didn't do anything, and this is embarrassing, for 13 years.
Wow.
I kept getting the emails, and finally, and then I had trainers calling and saying, you need to let other trainers know they had sick dogs and they were to keep the dog calm and on and on. And so finally, I sent them out to I did an article for the American Boarding Kennels Association. I said, I'm getting all these comments. Could you test it for me in your boarding kennels? And I took the baby CDs and I put a paper label on it. And I called them Canine Lullabies, Research Done on Human Babies First, which I thought was kind of funny at the time. Yes. I wasn't taking it real serious. I sent them out and I got back over 100 kennels said that it reduced separation anxiety, reduced diarrhea in the kennels, reduced the barking. And I thought to myself, well, why would they not be telling the truth? There's nothing in it for them, you know?
Right.
So, but still, it was so hard for me to believe in it. And I'd spent, you know, many years trying to establish my credibility with the medical community. And now I'm going to go out and tell these same people that the music I've been, you know, supplying to their hospitals and so forth works on dogs. I mean, I was afraid, you know, to do it, but I decided I'm going to do it anyway. And
good.
So
I'm glad you did.
I did an article in the American Humane Society, did a big article, and we always have given them free to organizations like Humane Societies to use in their facilities if they ask for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we added on, I guess, 500 to 750, you know, Humane Societies and rescues as a result of that article.
Yeah.
But where I realized it was for real is I lived in Colorado Springs at the time. And there were 10 Humane Societies there. There was a no-kill shelter and one that where they did kill dogs.
Yeah.
And I'd send them out to the local animal clinics and those two shelters. And I got a call from the no-kill shelter. And they said, we'd like to talk to you about your canine lullabies. And I thought, well, you know, she said, we need more for Denver and some other locations. How much? And I said, well, I give them free to, you know, Humane Society shelters to use in your facilities. How many do you want? She said, 7. I said, well, would you like them hand-delivered? Now, she called the 800 number and had no idea we were only a mile and a half away.
Okay.
And I'd never been to a Humane Society, I must admit. Uh-huh. Never, you know, had a reason to. And so I took them down there and went in, and I started to tell her about the story that in the cardiac recovery unit. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, she said, that's nice, but these are my babies. And she said, would you like to see it work? And I said, well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just 2 p.m, right?
Yeah.
Well, I go in there, I'm not in the Humane Society, and here I'm walking down the aisle, and all the dogs are jumping and barking, and I'm thinking, oh, this, it's a little unsettling.
It is.
It's your first time. Yeah.
For them and for us, yes, it is.
She had her little boom box down in the corner, And she said, watch. And so the dogs are all barking and jumping. She turned on, here comes, you know, the first song. In 15 seconds, every one of those dogs laid down in their cages. And I just couldn't believe it. I said, well, let it keep playing. You know, it was London Bridge again, right?
Yeah.
And I said, I walked down the aisle because I figured they'd all start jumping again. Not one dog paid attention to me. So I knew it was working. I just didn't know how important it was for in that situation because it helped make the dogs more adoptable and, you know, and thing and kennel cough and all the ways that it could really help those dogs. So now it's been used in probably 3,500 to 4,000 humane societies and shelters. And I guess the other thing for me, you know, I gave up the music business to help the babies and now help the dogs. And I needed to come up with some kind of an explanation, I felt, you know, to explain why I would work on dogs. They also had used it in Honolulu at the zoo on chimpanzees, and it really worked well with chimpanzees that they were having a lot of problems with. So I can understand the chimpanzees better than I could the dogs because they're more human-like.
But, right.
So I started, you know, saying, why would these work on dogs? And I found out the one thing that I was really intrigued by is how is it that a search dog can hear a human heartbeat from 75 feet away. Why is it that when the dog is in the living room with you and maybe your TV's going and people are talking and all of a sudden the dog jumps up and the ears start moving and they hear something that you and I can't hear at all and try to get their attention. You can't, and they're focused, right?
Right.
So I knew about their sense of smell, you know, the bond searching dog. And all that, and how they could discern a certain smell and not let smell anything else. You can try to disguise it all you want. If you're a drug dog, they're going to catch you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So unless they have the same thing with their hearing, it has to be because when you think about it, they hear 50 times better than we do. They hear up to 50,000 cycles. We hear up to maybe 20,000 at the most. So they're hearing things above 20 that we don't even hear that's going on in the environment.
Sure.
So they've got to have a way to focus on what they want to hear and habituate or block out from their conscious listening the other sounds.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, after I looked and I couldn't find anything, and finally I found out that in the inner ear, they have something that allows them to focus on a sound and habituate to the others. Mm-hmm. And so that, for me, I said, okay, now we know that they can choose to listen to what they want to hear.
Right.
Why are they listening to the heartbeat lullabies?
Uh-huh.
Well, they certainly know the owners or people's human heartbeat.
You know, mm-hmm.
They can hear it.
Yeah.
And it's familiar to them.
Yeah.
And I guess they also, probably if you're a person who's afraid of the dog, they can tell your heartbeat is speeding up.
Yeah.
That you're not being relaxed around them. But I thought, well, the other thing is, why would they retreat from something that's annoying like thunder or, you know, those kind of loud sounds?
Right.
And so what I realized was that the basic principles of relaxation and learning are the same.
Yes.
They're the same for human babies as they are for animals.
Yeah.
Repetition.
Right.
You know, over and over and over.
Right. Something simple. And the more, because I'm a dog trainer, so the more relaxed the dog is, the more likely they're to learn and also to retain what they've learned. So relaxation and learning are our best friends.
So I thought, well, in the case of the babies, it was these are familiar sounds.
Mm-hmm.
They're non-threatening,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going on there is because of the simplicity and the repetition of the lullabies and the way they're recorded and the familiar human heartbeat, they're attracted to that. It's a safe place for them to retreat to when something in the environment is upsetting them.
Yeah.
The one thing that I did have a hard time with understanding, and I'm not sure I even do now, because this is just my theory. You know, you got to be a dog to know really what's going on. But
on these
thunder phobia things, of course, they can hear so much better, but they hear the thunderstorm coming way before we do, right?
Exactly.
They hear that.
Right, yeah.
And so I tell people, you know, start playing it before you know you're going to have a thunderstorm, start planning ahead of time.
Right.
And quite frankly, I've always been a little bit upset when you hear a big loud clap of thunder. And, you know what I mean? You got the lightning doesn't bother me near as bad as the thunder coming afterwards. And so how can they focus on something and habituate to that?
Do you know what I mean?
How could they block that out of their conscious listening? I'm not really sure, other than they had that ability to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you where I learned that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in college, I got a master's degree in textile engineering. I won't even go into all that, but
yeah.
I was exposed to textile mills and loom rooms. And in the loom rooms, if you measured the sound level in those loom rooms, it was 95 decibels. It was so loud that you and I could be 3 feet apart and yell at each other and not really hear each other.
Oh, right? Yeah.
And yet, the people that worked there could hear Muzak. I don't know whether you remember Muzak, but it was like Element kind of music.
Yeah,
and a boring.
Yeah, yeah.
And they could focus on that and habituate to that loom sound. Now, if humans have that ability, and the dogs are so much better at it, I think that they could actually retreat so much from the startle sounds of the thunder that they don't get. I'm sure they're not excited about it,
but right. they don't love it. Right, right.
They don't get uneasy like some dogs do.
Yeah, well, I think that that's true because dogs actually have an on and off switch. So, like, if they are in the stress response, they can't relax until they get out of the stress response.
Right.
If they're in the relaxed response, they're not as likely to be as severely triggered by the stressor. So that quality of if you get them into relaxation, then they're going to have more resilience, ability to manage stressors. It doesn't mean it's going to be zero, but
right.
Yeah, so that's great. Well, we're going to take a short little break, and when we come back, maybe you can tell us some stories that you've heard from some of the people working with their dogs with the canine lullabies. We'll be back okay. in just a moment.
Hey friends, if you like what you're hearing and want to learn more, check out Dr. Joseph's book, The Human-Animal Connection, Deepening Relationships with Animals and Ourselves. Or visit the website, thehumananimalconnection.org, to book an online consultation. Thank you for loving animals. Now back to the show.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to the Human-Animal Connection, where we're speaking with Terry Woodford, and he is the creator of Canine Lullabies. And this is the use of the human heartbeat with lullabies, and specially produced in a way that is soothing for both babies, people, and now we find out doggies, and other animals, too.
That's true.
Yeah. So tell us some of the stories of people who've been working with your canine lullabies.
Well, I think that one of the most heartwarming stories for me was I got an email from some kids in Idaho. And what they said was that they had this little dog, and the little dog was supposedly in a coma. They'd taken it to the vet, and the vet, you know, says, you know, you would take your dog home because your dog's not going to live, basically. And these are kids that are like 11 and 12, something like that. And mm-hmm. So one of the kids said, and we remembered what they called the baby go to sleep CD.
Okay.
So we decided we would play the baby go to sleep CD round the clock for our little dog.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, so we played it for 2 days nonstop. We put it on, you know, CD players. You could put them on repeat, and they just continue to play.
Yeah.
After 2 days, all of a sudden, the little dog jumps up out of the coma.
Wow.
And they're telling me a story, and I'm thinking, I don't know what to say. Except it moved me enough
yeah.
to think that they had, these are kids that thought of doing that because they had gone to that same CD when they were children, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so to me, that was cool. The other one was, and this was one that was really fun for me. I tried to get one of the big dog chains, PetSmart.
Yeah.
To carry the CDs, right?
Right.
And so they just almost laughed at me. You know, they just,
wow.
Come on, you know, that we're not going to do this. And we couldn't even present it to my boss, this woman said. Now, here's wow. what here was the irony.
Wow.
In New Jersey, they have these trucks, the PetSmart sponsors, that transport dogs from one place to another.
Right.
Because in the Northeast, they have a shortage of rescue dogs. Mm-hmm. In the South and some other places, they have a, you know,
right,
a committee.
Right.
And they were using the CD and had a video on the dogs to keep those dogs calm while they were transporting them to the, and the, and they were really excited about it. And so they were using it to calm the dogs as they transported them, which a lot of times they really get upset and, you know.
Yes.
And it's really tough. So that was a fun story. But I get, you know, stories all the time about dogs that were hypersensitive, hyperactive, and they've been able to keep the dogs calm. And I think, much like the babies, the more you play it, the quicker they respond to it. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, you know, you really don't need to have all 18 songs. You know what I mean? Probably one would work if you just played it over and over. I don't know. But
yeah,
what I found out was most people will order the one that has 18 songs because they don't want to hear one song over and over. It's not the dog that cares.
Yes.
And so, and some people will tell me that their dog has a favorite song. I don't Well, that's really true or not. But anyway, so it's been fun. The other thing that happened to me recently that was pretty exciting is they did a research project. Well, I should tell you real quick what happened. In the cardiac recovery unit, you know, they were using it on the babies and the kids, right? Mm-hmm. And they said that it was making the nurses tired. That's why they wanted to play at a lower volume. And I'm thinking they're just putting me on, you know. But anyway, I was on a television talk show down in Tampa, Florida, and this woman called and said she was looking to do research on using an alternative to physical restraints and sedatives in nursing homes. And I'm thinking, I didn't know they did that. You know, they did back then for sure.
Yes.
So I said, well, yeah, I'll send you, you know, the CDs and players, you know, whatever you need. In the meantime, I got a call from Lewison Medical Center in Cleveland, Ohio, and they had heard about the music in pediatrics, and they wanted to try it in a geriatric unit. And now I said, fine. Yeah, I didn't know what a geriatric unit was, really. So, so I started thinking about it. I said, well, why not make music especially for adults? And I thought, well, I'll take songs from when they were teenagers, right?
Yeah.
You know, Lars theme, Scarlet Ribbons, Amazing Grace, you know, those. But I won't have many singers, but I'll use the same heartbeat. And by this time, I really knew how to do it quicker, you know?
Yeah.
And so I called the cardiac recovery unit, and I said, how about, you know, some music for your adults after open heart surgery? They said, well, you know, we'll give it a try. We'll ask the surgeon, see if it's okay. Well, so I sat down, and I had six songs, and I was a little late on the University of South Florida, which is where they were doing the other research, but I sent it to Ohio and sent it to UAB in Birmingham. 3 months pass. I don't hear anything. And I'm thinking, you know, come on, how could this miss? You know, it's anything is recorded the same structure, et cetera, just different songs and those singers. So I called the cardiac recovery unit and the head nurse answered, says, well, she said, I'm sorry, but we can't use the version you made for adults. And I'm thinking, they must have done something wrong. Or maybe the surgeons wouldn't let them. You know, so what's the problem? And she said, well, she said, you spend a lot of time here. As you know, we bring the patients in right after the surgery, and they're laying there on the bed, and a lot of times the anesthetic will wear off before the paralyzation does. And so we got the boom box there playing the music, And the person can see me and they can hear, but they can't feel anything. They're numb and they can't move. And on comes Amazing Grace. She said, their heart rate goes up. They think they're dying. It doesn't look like heaven. You know, so we can't play that. Now, I was too embarrassed. I didn't even think of that. But I thought, well, I'll call the geriatric unit nurse in Ohio. I can't give up that easy. So I get her on the phone. She said, I'm sorry, but we can't use your adult music. And I said, oh, it's Amazing Grace, right? She said, no, the problem is Moon River. And I said, Moon River, what's wrong with that? She said, well, for some, she said, you ever listen to an oldie station? And I said, yeah. And she said, I said, yeah, that's usually where I hear most of my songs now. She said, well, you ever hear that song? You remember the first time you heard it, who you're with? You can almost relive that experience. And I said, yeah. She said, well, you don't know why these people are here, do you? And I said, well, no, not really. She said, we're a referral hospital for about a 200-mile radius of nursing homes. And she said, the people that we get here are usually people that did not get visitors. Oh. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? You know, she said, if you don't get visitors, you don't get as good a care.
Uh-huh.
And she said, so always make sure that if you're ever put in the nursing home, tell your kids to make surprise visits.
Yeah.
She said, so when they listen to the baby one, which they're listening to, they flash back to a time when they were being calmed by their mom, or they're being shown love, affection, made to feel safe and secure, or they were calming their grandkids and so forth. So one thing that I've noticed about your dogs, if you're upset, if you're anxious, they will be too.
Yep.
I think they feed off your emotions and off your
food.
So if that can calm, you know, the adults and the dogs and the babies, it puts me on three fronts, and I'm too old and too tired to work at all. But it's really been a blessing for me, because being in the music business is compared to what I do is, you know, the music business is full of people that are motivated by fame, money, and ego.
Yeah.
And the people that I work with, people that work in, you know, boarding kennels and shelters and hospitals, these are compassionate, caring people.
Right.
And they've come up with every use for this music. You know, I didn't come up with any of the uses for it, and I've never ceased to be surprised on all the good stories I get to hear.
Yeah.
And appreciative, you know.
Yeah. Well, before we found out about you, we were singing lullabies to our therapy dogs and having our high school students sing to the dogs, and it using their names, you know.
Right.
And it calmed the dogs and the person singing. It calmed the whole room. You know, so it's just...
Yeah, I noticed some... I watched that video, and some of the songs you were singing were those old traditional nursery songs.
That's,
you know?
Right. Yeah, Brahms' Lullaby, which is, you know...
Brahms knew what he was doing, didn't he?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, no, it's you know, and just making up their own words and putting the dog's name in as often as possible. And, it, you know, because the dog is trained to respond to their name, so it gets their attention. And, yeah, so it's just beautiful work. I'm so happy that you've done this work and that you are able to do so much good for so many babies and heart patients and all like that. So what's do you have anything you want to do next that you haven't gotten to?
Well, I've done some things. One thing that I always like to bring to people's attention, and people I know that are big classical music enthusiasts don't like it. That's probably the worst music you could play for a dog or for a baby, because it's mathematically too sophisticated and too complicated. So it's annoying to them. It's alien, you know. I did a couple of songs, one for people who are addicted to alcohol and addicted to drugs. The other one, the idea is to play this song when you're feeling the urge to go back to your habit. And I've had some success with it. It's difficult to spread the word about it. But I did that. That was a fun project. I also did a project where I did the Marines hymn. You know, I did it because of the people that had died in Afghanistan. And I did it also because you never hear a very good version of it. And I also wanted to use women doing the whole verse by themselves, because you never hear women singing it, and women are in range just like the men, you know.
Right, right.
So I did that project and put that up on YouTube. So it's like the things that I get involved with now are things that can make a difference, you know.
Yep.
As you get older, like I am, things don't mean so much to you, material stuff.
Right.
And it's really what more, how can you make life better for other people?
Yes.
And so that's what I get off on. That's
wonderful.
Wonderful.
Well, how can people find you? Where do they go to get hold of Canine Lullabies?
So CanineLullabies.com is the website. You can see news stories on the baby site, which is HeartbeatLullaby.com, from old news stories where they were using cassettes, and you'll see babies calm in 5 seconds. So, and that's spelled out, you know, C-A-N-I-N-E L-U-L-L-A-B-I-E-S. I'll tell you what's funny. I can't resist. I've actually had people say, where can I get these canine lullabies? I probably should have never used the plural. People don't know whether it's I-E-S or Y-E-S.
You know? Right, right, right.
And, so you'll run into some pretty funny stuff sometimes. But
yeah. Well, just the primacy of the human heartbeat. It's where we all started, and it's where we love to return. So it's a wonderful
thing. And sound is the last thing, you know, that goes. Is our hearing. And the first thing that we get.
Yeah. Yeah, they say the babies, if you sing, you know, if the parents sing to the baby when they're still in the mother's belly, that they will recognize the father's voice if he sang to the baby or the mother's voice.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. Well, the power of sound for healing. I love it. Thank you, Terry Woodford, with so much for the work that you've done.
And well, thank you.
We'll have to talk with you again soon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to the Human Animal Connection podcast. We hope we'll see and hear you again. We'll say aloha for now.
Thank you for tuning in to the Human Animal Connection show. Please visit our website, thehumananimalconnection.org. There you can sign up for our free email newsletter, book a consultation, or check out our blogs and resources. Our best-selling book, The Human Animal Connection, is available on Amazon. And your donation of any amount keeps our nonprofit organization providing life-changing services.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.